Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Greg Baer, co-author with Ryan Rudzeski of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. And I regularly get to spend this pod time with you, and today I'm joined by a very special co-host, Sunanna Chand. Welcome, Sunanna.
Thank you so much, Greg. I could not be more excited to join you as co-host on the pod today. My name is Sunanna Chand. I have the honor of being executive director of the Reinvention Lab, which is Teach for America's Future of Learning Research and Development Engine. And I could also not be more excited for our guest today.
And at one time, Sunanna led Remake Learning, which is important because this is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
I can't believe I forgot to mention. I was once, but I say I will always be, a proud member of the Remake Learning Network. On today's episode, we're talking with the brilliant Francis Misano, CEO of New Schools Venture Fund, a venture philanthropy that builds a better education system by connecting people, resources, and ideas. Francis, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Sunanna. It's so wonderful to be here with you today and to be with you, Greg, as well.
Oh, we love having you here. Thank you. Now, when people think about education, or if they use the phrase education systems, like so many of us that work in education do, when we use that phrase education systems, we tend to think in stratospheric levels. But most people, when they think about education, think about their children's teachers, they think about principals, maybe they think about a superintendent or school board members. So help us understand, where do philanthropists fit in, especially philanthropists like New Schools Venture Fund?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So when I think about philanthropy and the role that philanthropy plays in supporting education systems, I think about philanthropy's role in three main categories. The first is in catalyzing innovation. So philanthropy has a massive role to play in helping to spark new ideas. And the language that I use for this is providing risk capital. So helping new ideas and new approaches get off the ground and helping leaders to create a proof of concept for different ideas to show what could work if supported. I also think philanthropy has a really important role to play in scaling what works through sustainable funding. So providing the ongoing support to organizations that are delivering results for kids. I mean, you both know this. Most nonprofits are reliant on some level of philanthropy. So this is such a critical role that philanthropy can play in providing grants and ongoing funding to support what's working in communities across the country. And then finally, I think philanthropy has a really important role to play in bridging divides across actors. Funders can bring together parents, students, educators, policymakers to exchange ideas, to exchange best practices, to share what's working, or if you're a parent or student, to share what you'd like to see happen in your community. And philanthropy has a really important role to play in bridging those divides. And so for us at New Schools, one of the things that we're focused on is in that first bucket, catalyzing innovation. So everything that we do is focused on supporting early stage educators and education leaders who have a bold idea for change in K-12 education. And we provide them with both funding and technical assistance support to help them grow their impact.
There are many listeners who've heard of philanthropy, but I want to understand your unique flavor, the unique flavor that New Schools brings to philanthropy. We have also worked as individuals and institutions about things like participatory grant making, which is a way of rewriting the rules. And so I'm curious for you to take us a click deeper into New Schools, your philosophy around philanthropy, and, you know, what's the special sauce that New Schools brings to the sector?
Well, I think the first place where I would start is, what is venture philanthropy, right? So that is kind of a fancy word, you know, term to talk about. What was this initial idea that started back in 1998 when New Schools was founded, which was John Doerr and Brooke Byers came together as two storied venture capitalists. They had been working at Kleiner Perkins, and they founded New Schools Venture Fund along with a social entrepreneur, Kim Smith, who we know Kim has started a range of organizations. And they came together around this deep belief in the power of entrepreneurs to drive change. The power of entrepreneurs to bring a new vision for new solutions, new ideas that could drive meaningful results in education. They basically took that venture capital investing model, which essentially is the combination of catalytic funding provided to early stage innovators, along with high impact technical assistance, that kind of being the blueprint for supporting kind of trajectory changing organizations' breakthroughs. And so the idea was, can you take that idea and apply it to the K-12 education space? And it's exciting that this mission is still going strong today. We continue to provide support to early stage education innovators. And so to your question of like, okay, let's go deeper. What's New School's a secret sauce? Part of what our secret sauce is, we don't have all the solutions that we need today in K-12 education to make sure that we can deliver on the promise of every young person getting an excellent education. And so what that means is we're at this place right now where we need to spread what we know is working based on the data, the research, and the evidence that we have. But we also need to innovate. We need new approaches and new ideas to help us in closing the gaps that exist across our field. And so as we're making investments, we're funding cohorts of innovators. And as we are constructing those portfolios, we're thinking about how do we best take risk? Risk on new ideas of things we haven't seen before. Risk in terms of maybe folks who haven't had experience in the idea that they're proposing, but are bringing together a strong team to complement their skill sets. But also we think a lot about how do we expand access to capital? How do we expand who gets to be an entrepreneur?
Francis, you said a moment ago, we don't have all the solutions we need today. And I know that you and your colleagues at New Schools talk then about the importance of playing the long game to reimagine this education system. And I'm so curious to hear you say even more about that vision of the long game as to what you imagine education to be or might be. And I suspect, too, that you feel a great sense of urgency. As a parent, as a teacher, I think, okay, like, of course we have to play the generational long game, but, you know, my kids right now deserve something that speaks to their futures. And so how do you balance that long game? What does it look like with the urgency of now?
I so appreciate you bringing in that perspective because it's something that I feel all the time. I'm a parent to a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 9-year-old. And as I watch them also getting older and time passing really quickly and seeing, oh my goodness, Danny is going to be heading to college in 3 years and seeing how rapidly our society and our technological advances are changing and shifting, wondering what the future will hold for her. And part of the reason why you see on our website this point of playing the long game is I think we have a mismatch between how we think about the amount of time it takes to drive change in education with the urgency that we all feel. I think we're in a place where to truly get the kind of generational shifts that we want to see in our education systems, it's going to take time. And so that requires patient capital. It requires a deep commitment to be in it for the long term. But that doesn't mean that therefore we can just say, okay, yeah, we're not going to get any outcomes in the short term. No, it's like harvest what's working, find ways to spread and scale that, right? So you're never satisfied to say like, okay, this is going to take a long time. We have to hold both timelines alongside each other. We both need to think about how do we bring in those new ideas and those new approaches? How do we have that patience to allow things to play out, to get the kind of evidence that we need before we turn our attention to the next thing, the next tactic, the next strategy?
It's no secret that in the world of education, this is a moment of great change, technological change, societal change, and a reflection of very real disagreements about the purpose of schools, of learning environments, of education in general. Something you said recently, the hope that you are garnering from all of the educators and education professionals you've been talking to across this country in these very deep conversations, and you said, quote, they're dreaming even in the dark. It's both a question about the thing that's giving you hope right now in this moment of great change, and a question about what's giving you concern.
What's giving me hope is the fact that this year, my team and I reviewed more than 1,600 new ideas, new innovations that came from leaders across the country. Most of them are educators, right? So they've been in the classroom, they were leading schools, they've been working in education systems. And despite all the challenges, they are saying, I have an idea. I have the courage and the will to put more energy behind this effort of improving education. Will you fund me? Will you consider this idea for change and for possibility? That gives me great optimism, because when you have a group that large, and just think about all the applications and all the ideas we did not see, right? Of folks who are saying, despite and still, given all these challenges, I still want to take a forward step to making an improvement. And I actually know what it takes because I've been in classrooms, I've been in schools. And so I think to get to a place of radical imagination and radical possibility, it starts with having the people who have the courage, the energy, and the will to step forward to do something about it. And so that gives me great hope. Now, the question that I think comes back to all of us, then what are we going to do to create the conditions to enable that will and that possibility to come about? So one of the things that I get nervous about is the fact that there's been declining support for K-12 education. So let's put aside what's happening with the administration right now for a moment, but Candid had a recent piece that showed that K-12 funding has declined from 32% in 2015 to 24% in 2022. And if I had a guess, I think that number has declined even further, right? And so there's this question, when you have all this possibility, will there be that catalytic capital? Will there be that scaling capital to help these strong ideas get off the ground so that our young people, at a moment when they need the support the most, can benefit from it?
This is Greg Baer, here with co-host Sunana Chand, and we're talking with Francis Masano, CEO of New Schools Venture Fund. Francis, you said a moment ago, what are we going to do to create the conditions that our educators need to pursue these new possibilities, the radical reimagining of what school, schooling, and learning could be? And I'm curious, because you probably think about that in some unique ways. So when you think about the skills and strengths that you have, as you're looking at the conditions that our educators need, what are you noticing? What are you looking for? What are you hoping for that might be different than your average bear?
What I'm looking for from the educators and the innovators that we're supporting, I would say the first thing is a willingness to learn, a willingness to be coached. The work of starting a new organization is not for the faint of heart. The work of introducing an idea that may not exist, that hasn't been proven before, takes a lot of iteration and refinement. And so I think that first step is like the orientation that an educator brings, a leader brings, to say, I am willing to learn, I am willing to refine, I'm willing to pivot. Bold, visionary leadership, courage, but also great humility. It is really hard to find that combination. And so that is one of the things that I look for. In addition to looking for that clear vision, I want to see leaders who have a view of how they're going to know whether or not they're on the right track. It's this careful balance, right? Because so many of our leaders are creating next practice, are creating new bodies of evidence. And so you can't just rely on what exists right now. You also need to think about how you can build something new, leveraging the foundation of research and evidence that exists. And so I'm looking for the ability and the willingness to kind of put those ideas out there so that you can get more input, more feedback, so you can test and learn. I would not be talking to you, Greg and Sunana, were it not for the education interventions and the nonprofits that supported me on my professional and educational journey.
I recently was struck by your reflections of Lenice Flowers in this process of unbecoming and how important that's been to you.
Yeah.
How has your thinking evolved on education since you've been a part of it? What's changed? What have you unlearned? What have you learned?
How have you been that learner?
Yeah. One of the biggest shifts that I think I have unlearned, and I'm hoping that we have unlearned in the field as well, is that the work of improving education is not about one heroic individual. It is about the work that we do in community with each other. It is about the work that students, their families, their community members, along with educators and experts do together. And I feel like as I lead, I am attempting to lead with great humility that I do not have all the answers. And that when I have a question, the most important step that I should take and I can take is to use it as an opportunity to ask those who are closest to the issue what their experience is. So as an example, given all the changes in our society, in our landscape, whether those are policy changes, financial changes, this question of like, how do we best support innovators in navigating this moment of uncertainty? That's not for me to decide on my own in my office with a small group of people. That's a moment to look outward and to ask folks, what do you most need? What support will help you to navigate? My hope is in this time of challenge that this is not a moment where we turn inward, but we actually turn outward. Some of those stats of declining funding to K-12 education, we don't solve that by going into a room and trying to create the strongest strategy for change. We solve that by trying to do the work of building more champions for raising the importance of this issue and thinking about how we come together collectively to drive change. And in some ways, that feels like such a radical act given all the forces that are at play and trying to divide us.
Moments ago, Francis, you humbly said, I do not have all of the answers. Well, I'm hopeful that you do have the answers for the next questions in what we love to call the lightning round. We just want the first answers that come to mind. Are you ready to play, Francis?
I am ready to play. Let's do it.
All right. Who is a teacher from your own schooling journey that you look back on as an innovative educator?
When I look back on my journey, I think about Mr. Khan, my 11th grade teacher, who was actually teaching an ethnic studies class, but it was like a debate class, right? And so where we all had rich texts that we were engaging in on different kinds of issues, it was like my first introduction to sociology. And we basically came into class ready to debate really thorny questions. And so even down to the ways in which our class was organized, more with soft seating and more as like a college course and discussion, like it really felt like it was an innovative approach to what was my more traditional school environment.
Francis, you are an avid karaoke singer. I am not. So I want to know, what is your go-to karaoke song and can I do it myself?
Well, whether or not you can do it, I can't answer, Greg. But what I will tell you is my go-to song is I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston. So yes. I like anything with a strong female vocal. Something that's going to get folks dancing, that is absolutely my go-to.
Francis, I want to dance with somebody.
Okay. I want to feel the heat with somebody. Yeah. Yeah.
Francis, this is how I know you're ambitious, because you're choosing Whitney Houston songs as your karaoke song. That's pretty ambitious.
Well, here's the fun fact. There is a cassette recording of me singing I Believe the Children Are the Future, The Greatest Love of All, right? Whitney Houston. And if you look at those lyrics, you can see how that song was foretelling my future in education.
I love that. So Francis, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Parents, educators, get to know the young people in your life. Ask them what they want to learn, how they want to learn it, so that you have the information you need to connect what you're doing every single day to support their journey. But if you allow me a second thing that I want to say, get involved with your school board. Vote, run for office, go to a meeting. I feel like school boards are so incredibly important to what school looks like in every single community, and I'd love to see more folks getting involved and more active.
Thanks again to Francis Masano, CEO of New Schools Venture Fund. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org. And thank you to Greg and Remake Learning for having me as a guest host on the two first episodes of season 9.
Come on back, Sunana.